This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter on X at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial 92.9 FM or 680 AM, but you can stay up to date anytime, anywhere, any place on demand by listening on the Odyssey app. It's free to download, free to listen. You can even stay up to date. If you missed a segment, you can rewind. All of it's right there on the Odyssey app, the best way to stay up to date with everything happening here at 92.9 FM ESPN. Dennis Fuller's producing the program. Glad that he is with us, my company, as he is each and every Monday. He's the team director and head coach of Team Thad, of course, of the Nike EYBL circuit on Twitter, on X, at Dream Big Herd. Coach Herd, good day, sir.
Great day, great week.
Let's see what we got coming up on the program. We will talk about, yet again, another massive weekend, but wanted to start first with the Grizzlies, get Herd's thoughts on what we've seen through three games. The Grizzlies will return to action tonight. They will take on Chicago Bulls. You can hear pregame right here on 92.9 FM ESPN at 6:30. Tip-off at 7 p.m. Eric will have the call. Jason Munn's going to join us like he does each and every Monday. Tiger basketball set for their second exhibition. It's a game tonight in Huntsville. You can see it on ESPN Plus, 7 p.m. for that. We'll get Munz's thoughts on everything that is happening with the Tiger basketball program. Also get his thoughts on the Tyreek Smith. I don't know if we call it saga or whatnot, but certainly everything that has happened last week with Tyreek Smith and his what we should expect to see tonight. We'll get into the list. Herd, I don't know why we can't get statues right, but they did your boy D-Wade. They did him wrong. So we'll talk about D-Wade's statues, some of the bad statues, a few other things that are newsy. We'll do that during the list. We'll also get into what we thought was the best of the weekend. We'll tell your story, and then we will get out of here. But I first thought, let's start with the Grizzlies. It's been three games, so they split on the road to start the season. They get the big last-minute win against the Jazz. They turn around and get dominated by the Rockets. Really particularly hurt, it was the third quarter that had everybody kind of going nuts. It felt like the adjustments that the Rockets made from the first half to the second half was they decided they were just going to attack the paint, go inside, really bully the Grizzlies. The third quarter is where they lose that one. And then they turn right back around and have the home opener against the Magic. Magic come in 2-0, and a team that I think a lot of people have maybe not championship aspirations, but if you tell me team that people think could win 55-plus games in the East and take that step, I think most people think the Magic very much could be that. And the Grizzlies from the opening jump, like, they just had more energy. Obviously, it was Jaren's debut. Ja was listed as questionable, wasn't quite sure whether or not he was going to go, makes the decision to go, and the Grizzlies really dominated the game from start to finish. Got a little weird, kind of the third, like the late third into the fourth, but the Grizzlies built up a massive, essentially, like, I think at one point it was a 29-point lead, and that was all she wrote. They finished strong. They hit a few shots in the fourth quarter. Santi hits a big three. Dez hits a big three, and then it's quickly back out to 20. And then you spend the night chanting, "We want Yuki," getting Yuki's first action. Wasn't great defensively, but the fans got what they want. But it was a good opening night because the Grizzlies got a quality win, essentially leading wire to wire. But I think whenever you've seen just three games, everything's obviously going to be an overreaction. But the thing that I just keep gravitating back towards whenever I'm watching the Grizzlies, I know he is not lighting up the stat sheet And I know that the jump shots have not exactly inspired everyone. But man, when you watch Ja Morant right now, it feels like, I'm fine saying this because it's overreaction Monday, and I know it's not the case, but it's like, it feels like he's playing the perfect version of Ja Morant basketball for the Grizzlies to be really good. He's always in control. He has been unbelievable in the paint. He has been awesome finishing at the rim. He attracts so much attention that it really allows his vision and the way he sees the floor to open up, because it's like as soon as guys attack him, he's just finding somebody for a wide open look. And again, like, I know he's not overwhelming people with numbers. We haven't had a 50-point game. We haven't even had a 30-point game. But when you're watching him right now, it just feels like the best version of Ja Morant that we've seen has typically been the guy he's when he's around somewhere in the 20s, around 10 assists, 5 rebounds, making stuff happen a little bit defensively. And that's the other thing. I feel like he's actually emphasizing the defensive end this year, but right now it's like when I watch him play, it's like, God, he is just playing so well.
Yeah, I think if you truly, truly know basketball, you appreciate how he's playing right now. I think the word, the number one word that would come to my mind that he's playing with right now is under control, winning basketball, and he's doing it at, if you watch some of the guys that are great in their 30s and 35s, it's when the game have slowed down in their mind, right? So you might think some of the stats ain't it. You know, they say one of the strongest men in the world is a man who know he could conquer or destroy the world, but you have enough, you know, savvy to still live life the right way. You know what I mean? I feel that about him. I think he can, like you say, hit 30, 40, 50 when he won't. But I think he also understands now that being smart is a long season. I think he might feel like playing like that could get him banged up quicker. Because like you say, he was even questionable before this game. And so he's playing at a I appreciate it.
Yes.
He's playing at a pace and a level that I appreciate. And I think it makes term for his career and winning basketball long term. And I think he's just playing excellent ball.
Obviously, how you see the game, how you feel about the game, I feel like it's always largely based on kind of what position did you play? What are you familiar with? And while I never played at a high level, I still view myself as a point guard.
Yeah.
And so it's something about the way that he's running the offense. The pace is up. I think right now through the first three games, they're third right now in the league in pace. But it just always feels like, I kind of go back to, it's like, of all the versions we've seen of Ja, the one that I thought had the highest ceiling was the version we saw when the Grizzlies first won the division. They get the first 2 seed. They knock off the Timberwolves in the first round, and then they lose to the Warriors in 6 in the second round. But that version to me was, he had the ability to go off and whatnot, but for the most part, it was controlling the game, dominating the game. It's almost right now, it's flashier because he's so much more explosive, but it does remind me of like prime Chris Paul right now. And it looks a little different because Chris Paul was never the explosive athlete that Ja is. But I think also Chris Paul is a little bit better shooter than Ja is. But like in terms of when they're on the floor running the show, it feels like everything just works so much better.
You just said it. You said it again, Jeffrey. Under control. And when you bring up Chris Paul, that lets you know his IQ, the things he's doing to put his guys in place. Like you say, I also play point guard, so I look at it like that too. And so the things he's doing is just, like you say, it's brilliant. And I think as guys continue to get healthy, like with Jaren coming back and guys like that, he can play like this. And you know it's Ja Morant. So he, you know, I'm not a better like y'all, but if I had to bet, will he hit 40 before November out? 50, maybe. I would say yes, you know what I mean? But at the same time, I think night in and night out, he would be doing what he's doing with this.
Well, so that brings up a different question, because another thing that we've seen, and again, it's three games, but Chris Harrington said he asked Taylor Jenkins about it afterwards, but we are seeing a higher number of guys playing, and guys are playing fewer minutes. And largely, he's attributing to, if you're going to play at the pace that we play at, we're going to play more guys, and we're going to play guys fewer minutes. So if you tell me that Ja doesn't end up having that 40 or 50 point game, I think it's only a result of, well, it's because he only probably played 28 minutes, 29 minutes. But I do think that's interesting. How do you feel about the mindset of they're going to adopt the faster pace, play more guys, fewer minutes, but they're going to play at that breakneck pace? How do you feel about it in terms of being an NBA kind of philosophy?
Yeah, like you say, from an NBA, because I do that, but I don't know if from an NBA, you know, coaches, if it's winning, you know, coaches have had their different ways, like a D'Antoni and different things that work for them and innovate the game and innovate their roster. And every year, I'm sure he saw something on this, because, you know, with analytics and different things, everybody's trying to create their different version of the curveball that makes sense and be the next one. So with this, I think it could work. But the only thing I would say about that, knowing coaches, when the game is tight, it's a lot. I think it's going to go for everybody else. It's a lot of games that Ja will end up still with 35 minutes, 40 minutes. Like, I just know how it is when you're having them tight games, middle of the year, playoff position. I just know it's dog eat dog.
I'm with you. My only concern about it is it's always felt to me like a system that it works in the regular season. Because you just, not everybody's designed for that kind of pace, whatnot. Like, we've seen a lot of teams have success with it. The Pacers had a ton of success with it. I mean, they got to an Eastern Conference Finals. Yes, I understand the East was largely injuries dictated a lot of the outcome. And you know, it didn't feel like, oh, that's a true Eastern Conference Finals. With that being said, like, that's how they won two playoff series, and they got there. The Kings, I feel like, did it 2 years ago with a lot of success. The key to me, though, is I'm okay with it as a philosophy, because when you still are going to get into the playoffs, when everyone's going to kind of be able to dictate pace a little bit and the game slows down, the thing that is the most encouraging is this version of Ja Morant, I feel like, in the playoffs will be designed to be an absolute killer.
Agreed upon. And like you say, Ja Morant, man, and, you know, I'm a big Ja guy, I'm a big Anthony Edwards guy, I'm a big LeBron guy, but I just feel like for him to be off that long, Jeffrey, it's a case to be said, and I know it's only three games, that he might be the most excited, the most feared, and maybe arguably the best player in the game. I mean, from when he made that move in Utah, I mean, I know the world is different. You can't cut on your TV. I mean, he is just... I catch it. I watch it. And
it wasn't even a dunk.
It wasn't.
That's the other thing. It's like, so, my spirit of full disclosure, quick story time. My wife had been out of town on work, and she gets back, and she's in the mode of, like, I want to talk to someone that I know for a while here. And so she's telling me about her trip, whatnot, and that play happens. And I stop her. I was like, I want you to know I'm listening to everything you say, but I was like, you have to watch this. And then I rewound it, and she watched it and was like, oh my God. Because there was like four different moments where you're like, oh my God. Oh my God. Like, first, the handle.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, how did he not lose the basketball? Like, that was insane. Then the craftiness to get people off their feet, then to kind of figure out the way to get the angle and to still finish the play. And it's like, this is a layup. And it's like, but to your point, when you're watching, you're just like, how did he do that? And that's, like, to your point, it's like, I don't know if, is he the best player in the game? It's like, probably not. With that being said, he does more things that I go, holy bleep, than just about anyone in the game right now.
Just about anything. And I want to also give Jeffrey, I don't know, because the information got put out late. I also want to give, you know, Ja Morant, I don't know if a lot of people have seen it. I'm sure you probably seen it because they put it together a little late, but with Nike basketball and the cool things they did this week.
Oh, they had the and also, I got to imagine that shoe that debuted this weekend, I would imagine that thing flew off the shelf.
So, yeah, so they and then what they came was pretty cool. They came and put a game together. You know, I was in Miami this weekend, a block party, a lot of different things. They had all the top high school and middle school kids, boys and girls, they gave a shoe to. It was actually pretty impressive what Jai and Nike basketball did. And they wanted to do it right in Memphis to kind of, you know, for the community. So it was a pretty good all-around weekend. I know a lot of people knew, but then, like I say, I know it also it kind of was put together late, so I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't no promoting a month. It was like 3 days to a week that people start really.
I felt like they promoted it almost like a pop-up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. But I will say this about Nike. Nike is a very organized company, but when they need to pull something out, sometimes because of their resources, they can do some stuff in 2-3 days that the average man might have to prepare for like 3-4 months.
Yeah, when you get to the point, it's like they can pull it off just simply because they have so much money. Yeah. And it's like,
creativity,
right?
But money
and they have a massive marketing like the entire marketing department. I think that's the other thing that you also realize. It's like, everyone kind of had to push pause for some of the off the court stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it is, I do feel like everybody's ready to be like, all right, we forgive you. We're ready to move on. And like, let's go get the bag, like whatnot. And it's just like, hopefully, like, we've learned the lesson. Like, because I do think part of the John Morant story is the fact that it really was kind of like an overnight stardom. Mm-hmm. Because maybe you can explain it to me a little bit better. How was he so overlooked? Because the best explanation that I got was he wound up originally, like the big South Carolina AAU team, he didn't play that much.
Mm-hmm.
And then his dad, I guess, started his own team so that he could play more, but that team didn't have the cachet, the resources, mm-hmm. whatnot. Is that correct? Because that's kind of my understanding. Is like, it was a lot of the summer league stuff, or not summer league, whatever. The grassroots circuit. Yep. He just never was like featured, and so he just kind of got lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, so I could believe some of that because summer is unless you like at a national prep school. In the last, I would say 15 to 25 years, especially in the 2000s, a lot. The summer have ran everything as far as like marketing, rankings. You know, back, I was just talking to a guy earlier on the phone before I came here, was talking about how much in the 90s high school and high school coaches controlled.
Well, I mean, think about how much more coaches recruited off of high school than they did just going to the summer showcase.
And so it changed. So, I mean, then you know, Vicaro, we were talking deep basketball. So, yeah, I could see that because in that area, I know the two guys, the top guys in that class, one of them deserved to be, which was Zion Williams.
Yes.
You know, he had started dunking on everybody from 7-8-9. He was like one of the first in the Instagram world that became like the biggest sensation. And then after that, it was, what's his name? Dante Shula that played for Ole Miss.
Yeah.
He was really good. So them was the kind of the top two players in South Carolina. And this happens too, John. I tell parents this all the time. Sometimes a parent will go to a good college or even make it to the league, and they'll try to call their ninth grade coach, or I told you so. Not necessarily, because in ninth grade, it might have been some players better than you. In 11th grade, that don't mean that you're not going to be better long term, but right now, this is just the case.
No, it's just, but like I've mentioned all of that to say, it's like, he then goes in his first year at Murray State, he played, but it wasn't like the fanfare.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously he has the breakout second year. Gets drafted after his second year, clearly comes in and lights the league on fire. But it wasn't like with Zion, to your point, Zion had been famous for like 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is kind of all this success coming very quickly, and not everybody handles it the right way. And like, I do think that's part of Ja's story. And I'm not saying I wanted him to get lighter in the wallet, but I do think oftentimes, when some money gets taken away from you, you start to realize, like, all right, I can't do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think right now, the way he's carrying himself, the way he's playing, like, it's the entire package right now. It's like, man, this guy feels like he's poised to have that type of year, because it's like everything's falling in place. I feel like his game's where it needs to be. I feel like his head's where it needs to be. And it's just a delight to watch right now.
For sure. And like you say, like us, it's not any off the court, on the court. And I just think it was a matter of him. He have a great family, you know, T and Phil, of those guys, and Dre would just list go on and on and on and tap. And I just think he just, you know, I think even being injured, I don't think it was the even as much as off court being injured.
Gave, sure.
You know, that kind
having of. Having basketball, literally physically, because even when you're, if you're suspended and you want to go dribble around, do you can still play basketball. When he had the surgery, it's like literally basketball physically gets taken from you.
For sure. And I just think with that, how passionate he is about the game, the competitor he is, I think it let him, maybe even like you say, with him being more in control, it let him see things, you know, night in and night out that he probably wanted to add when he got back. So I just think, you know, he's maturing as a person, and the longer, you know, he does it, then people, forgive or want to, because I think he's still a guy that, you know, a lot of people root for, a lot of people love. Unfortunately, I think you're 100% right, Jeff, about the fines and stuff, but I mean, this is going to sound crazy to the listeners, and I didn't say it at this point, everybody looking at me crazy. It's more about maturing yourself. These young guys, his status with the new money, I don't even think they really feel that. As much as he, like, I'm just be real, because he's going to still end up being a billionaire.
When you have that much money, but I do think, and maybe the money, you're right, is, but he was taken out of the center of attention.
He did, yeah.
And like, I even like looking, it's kind of like some of the things that go on during the game, like when he's not even playing. Like in the Utah game, you could hear him, like he's on the, when he was on the bench, like he's like essentially like coaching, you know, coaching the offense and whatnot. Like he's locked in, he's engaged, and you can just tell like he has ownership. And it always kind of comes back to, like you talked about when you had your first EYBL team and your two best players were your best leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, now it feels like with Ja, it's like this is clearly his team. He has taken ownership of it, and it just it feels like this is the best thing you could ask for through three games, because from a mindset, from a focus, like everything that you want to see, you're seeing. Like the only thing I would nitpick, and I'm not even nitpicking because I've been so impressed through three games. So it's like I kind of wish you were making some more shots, mm-hmm. but other than that, I will live with that.
Yeah.
Because I still think this version can take them a really long way.
For sure. Like I say, he's what we all want him to be. I mean, Nike got the trucks around here, and he's flying high. And like I say, Jaren is back. And like, I guess next what I want to see is like, you know, in the next 10 to 15 games, you know, if everyone could stay 100, you know, healthy in the starting lineup, and then we could finally get some consistency and they can, you know, make their run.
Yeah. I think the other thing that we saw from the, if you want to do overreactions, it's amazing, but your defense gets a lot better when Jaren's on the floor. It turns out that he does make a big difference. But I think the other thing that's if we want to discuss, so through three games, what we're seeing with Edie, I don't really know how to categorize it, because on the one hand, there's always going to be, because of everyone knows him and there were takes about him during the draft. The problems that I'm seeing, though, I'm slightly encouraged, because the issues that I'm watching are not the issues that actually scared me. At times, there have been some, you know, get him out in space and kind of pick on him defensively. But really, that hasn't been the big problem. Like, to me, the big problem is learning how not to foul.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Jaren Jackson Jr., who I think we would all agree, in terms of an athlete, is a better athlete than Zach.
Yeah.
Well, Jaren struggled with that for a long period of time. And then I think some of the offensive problems has honestly just been he's a little hesitant. And you can kind of feel like it. You know, like when you feel someone's kind of thinking as they're going and not just playing?
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's like that's kind of stuff that goes away with reps and with whatnot. Now, like, am I sitting here and going, like, everything's A-okay? No, because he's clearly not playing well enough. I mean, he's been played off the floor in terms of his production has put him on the bench. But the things that his struggles to me feel like things that are correctable with, honestly, mainly just kind of getting reps.
No, I agree. Like you say, it's not perfect, but it's his third NBA game.
Right.
So, like, it's naturally for him to overthink. It's naturally for the more reps he get, also the more NBA arenas he go to, he's going to calm down. Right now, you can look at him. His heart probably racing fast. He's 100% player of the year and those things. But as he continue to go the back-to-backs more, I think he'll get better with it. You know, not saying he's ever going to be a superstar.
But that's not what they're asking him.
No, exactly.
To your point, it's like, and there's also an adjustment from style of play. You know, I mean, his entire career was basically back to the basket, slow down with not a lot of pace. He's slimmed down. He's having to adjust to pace. He's trying to fit into a team that is trying to win now, and you're trying to find your place. Like, there are, to me, it's like, I feel like it's more circumstantial reasons than it is this guy can't play. And I think that's kind of how I've been encouraged, despite the fact that, like, yes, when you look at the numbers, you're like, that's not good. But I don't feel like when I'm watching it, it feels as bad as it looks. The Utah game was bad, but I also think, to your point, there's clearly some NBA veterans that are, like, targeting him and, like, going after him. And now, the other good thing I would say is they're 2-1, and he hasn't played well. And that's been a huge part of it. And really, like, I look at it this way. They're 2-1, and it's not like Dez has shot the ball amazingly. Santi's been good in 2 of 3 games. And then you're getting, like, unbelievable production from Jay Huff. And there is the question for me, though, with Huff is how much of this is, like, real versus this is a guy that's a big that's hitting a lot of shots. And now, granted, he has a history of hitting shots. But mainly when I'm watching him, it's like, how did this guy not have a home? Like, it's like he does everything that you want of modern bigs. It's like he can shoot, he can block shots, he sees the floor pretty well. I think that's kind of the other thing that stands out. It's like through 3 games, like have they found another like diamond in the rough?
I think they have. I think they have. And what happens also, Jeff, is, man, people be putting in that work in the summer. You know what I mean? Especially sure. Those young guys, man, guys that want to stick in the league, guys that want to get a big contract one day, you know, what we might call, the NBA might call little, that's something big that can live them the rest of their life if they just get one of those, you know, 3 for 20s or sure. 2 for, you know what I mean?
I'm available for that.
Anytime, any day. So I think Huff, man, he had to put that work in because he's making shots on the high level, right? And who's to say he was, you know, he go back to the bench, he easily got to be one of the most important people. But, man, back to Zach, I just think that he will be okay. And like we talked about that earlier, from Bradley to Yao Ming to any other centers, like, yeah, some veterans, I know how they are. You know, they want to prove a point. They want to catch him on the poster. They want to, you know, pick on him. So, you know, he's a big boy. He will get used to that, and he will make his name, but it is part of the process.
All right, let's take a quick break. Let's turn our attention to the Tigers because the Tigers will take on Alabama. Big exhibition game tonight. It's in Huntsville. You can watch it 7 p.m. on ESPN+. But also want to remind you, program's brought to you by our good friends over at Birdies. It's still Oktoberfest, or Golftoberfest, I should say, for a few more days, and that means that you can book online and still enjoy half off standard golf rates. And now is still the time to book your holiday party for the work event, church group, whoever you're thinking about. If you book now, you can still get the Golftoberfest rates, even if your event happens next month or into December. So you can still get half off. Golf at birdies.com for all the information. Check out the membership options. $100 a month gets you 10 hours on the simulators. Also, weekends, you can do karaoke on Simulator 2. That makes for another great group event. All of that over at golfatbirdies.com. When we come back, let's turn our attention to the Tigers. We'll talk with Munns next, right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Jason Munns is the Tiger basketball beat writer for the Commercial Appeal. Joins us each and every Monday on the program. Follow him on Twitter, on X, at Munsley. Munz, this feels like some haunting, like spooky music.
Well, Jeffrey, as you know, it is spooky season, and that is the a band called Bolts of Melody, and the track title is "The Isle is Full of Noises."
Is this an instrumental ditty?
It is. It is. Bolts of Melody is like a side project to another band that I really am a big fan of called Swerve Driver, and yeah, that's Adam Franklin is the mastermind behind both projects, and this is the latest from Bolts of Melody.
All right, so we got another look at the Tigers tonight. They'll be out in Huntsville. What are we calling this? The Rocket City?
It's Rocket City Classic in beautiful Space City.
In beautiful Space City. 7 p.m. You can watch it on ESPN+. I guess the first question is, what's Tyreek Smith's role going to be?
Well, that remains to be seen, right? That's
I guess we'll find out.
And it is very intriguing. I said this all along. I've probably said it on your show multiple times, but I know that I've written it and I've said it before to other people, if not on your show. But I've thought the entire time, this entire off season since everything got put into place, all the pieces were put into place, that Tyreek Smith was probably going to be the starter at the four on this basketball team. As far as I know, that is, I don't know whether he was told anything about starting or not. And we can get to that in a second, but I think his understanding of his role was going to be at the four, that he was going to be allowed to do more than basically be a small ball five. We've had one exhibition game where there was no Musa Cisse, where, you know, you kind of needed somebody to, you were a little bit thin at the five. So if he played more five in the North Carolina game, you know, I still don't think that his role had as much to do with everything that took place with him. I guess it was still just last week. I still believe wholeheartedly that it had to do with not only NIL, but also just some general tension that happens, you know, pretty much with everybody everywhere in every sport. But it is going to be interesting to see, because we were told last week, Penny mentioned in his availability, that Musa Cisse, the 6'11/7-footer that has returned to Memphis, will be ready to go tonight. So, it is going to be interesting to see just exactly how much time Tyreek Smith gets and where it's going to be and how it's going to unfold. But, that's just one of many things to keep an eye on in tonight's game.
What do we know what happened? I mean, we know he's back, but like, to the best of your knowledge, what do you think at this point, or what do you believe actually happened in how this whole thing played out?
So essentially what happened is he missed a study hall. There was a study hall that he got with the monitor, instructor, teacher, whatever, professor, got with them and explained that he was under the weather, and they excused him from study hall. Well, apparently that didn't necessarily pass the smell test with somebody on the staff. And some words were exchanged. There was some running that was involved.
The old handled internally.
Yeah. Like, you got to come in at the break of dawn, we're going to handle this way, sort of thing. And it just sort of, tensions got high, and sort of, you know, it was the way it was told to me was that, you know, there had been this sort of NIL deal, this general, I don't know what the right word is, but there was there was some uneasiness on the Tyreek Smith side about the way NIL was being distributed, like the timing of it, not necessarily how much or whatever, but like the timing of it was not exactly how they thought it was originally designed. And so, you know, once it got to where there was, you know, a conversation being had, it was almost like, okay, well, if, you know, and this is like the Tyreek Smith side, it's like, if you're going to make me run, if you're going to come down on me for missing a study hall that was basically an excused absence, well, then we're going to have this other conversation too. Let's also talk about the NIL situation. And then it just, you know, like he asked, I know he legitimately asked Penny if he could step away for a day or two to sort of clear his head and think about things and get everybody on the same page. And when that happened, as Penny explained late last week, there were some people who didn't quite know everything about the situation. And all of a sudden, one day he's not at practice, and then all of a sudden that gets telephoned to this person and that person and this person and that person, and then it eventually blows up into what it was. But every conversation I've had with anybody, whether it's on Tyreek Smith's side or the Memphis side, has told me that it was nothing more than a misunderstanding that was brought to a head by just the heat of battle.
So what do you think tonight? Do you think that we're going to start to see more of what you thought, because that he is going to play at the four versus circumstances kind of forced him into in an exhibition? Hey, you're playing a different spot. Like, well, what are the things that you're looking for tonight?
I mean, honestly, I would think that, you know, naturally, when you add a player like Musa Cisse, who is strictly a five, you know, like those, you're not going to need as much help at the five. And let's not forget, Dane Danger sort of tweaked his back in that North Carolina game, or shortly before the North Carolina game. I can't remember exactly what Penny said, but there was, you know, there was a reason why he didn't play as many minutes. So they were, you know, they were pretty thin at the five, which, again, you got to do what you got to do when the buzzer, you know, when the whistle blows. And so if Tyreek Smith had to play more five than he thought he was going to, there were reasons for that. Now, you know, you would think 10 days later, Dane Danger is probably feeling a little bit better. You've got Musa Cisse back into the mix. It just doesn't seem like there's going to be as much of a need for Tyreek Smith at the five. So I do think that we're going to see him tonight predominantly at the four. Now, whether or not he starts, I don't know. I know he only played 15 minutes against North Carolina, but he had 8 points and a couple of rebounds and a couple of either steals or blocks. So he was, you know, he impacted the game in a short amount of time. Like I said, don't know whether he's going to start, but I feel like as we get deeper and deeper into the season, he's going to wind up. If he doesn't start, he's going to definitely play starters minutes.
What are the other things that you're looking for tonight?
Well, can you hit three pointers better than you did? If you're Memphis, can Memphis hit? Can they, like, you know, be consistent, a good 3-point shooting team? Obviously, a lot of that's going to be on Colby Rogers. He's a 39% career 3-point shooter who was only 2 of 11 against North Carolina. So, you know, can he get on a roll early? How is Memphis's, just from an overall standpoint, like, how is Memphis going to handle the Alabama backcourt? Because it doesn't matter who they're missing, and they are missing, according to Don Rossi. Now, I know this is Grant Nelson's not a backcourt player, but they're missing Grant Nelson, Latrell Wrightsell, and Aiden Sherrell. So they're going to be just as shorthanded as they were. Don't know yet whether Chris Youngblood's going to play. He didn't play in their other exhibition game against Wake Forest, so he may not play. Tonight. So, but even still, without all those guys, Alabama still attempted 46 three-pointers in a 40-minute game and made 19 of them against Wake Forest. So, like, you know, and Mark Sears is preseason All-American. Some people think he is up there with R.J. Davis as the best player in the country. So, you know, that's another thing I'm looking for is what can Memphis, you know, like there's been a lot of talk this offseason about how much better they're going to be defensively, how much closer they're going to get to the identity that Penny Hardaway wants his teams to have. And tonight's going to be another big test. And, you know, you don't have to go out and completely shut somebody like Mark Sears down or shut the Alabama offense down. But if you can, you know, hold them to less than what their projected averages are, then I think that's a win, whether you win the game or not, that's a win. So those are sort of the things that I'm looking for. And of course, Musa Cisse back in a Memphis uniform, getting on the floor for the first time. I want to see what he, you know, how he looks and how the rest of the front court operates around him, you know, how it all sort of, how that rotation comes together.
What do you expect his role to be?
I think he is going to be, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say this early, but like, I don't want to put too many expectations, on him. You know, so erring on that side of things, like I would say, you know, he's going to probably be in the 15-minute a game range. But I mean, he's a defensive, specialist. His offensive game is very limited. It still is. You know, he's worked very, very hard on developing a mid-range jumper. We saw a little bit of it in the pro day workout that we got to see and the showcase, you know, and it really doesn't look bad. It's actually, you know, there's something there. And so, you know, if he can continue to work on that and get better as the season goes on, that'll be a nice plus. But, you know, I think he just needs to do what he does best, and that is protect the rim and give Memphis a rim running lob threat. Or another rim running lob threat. I think Tyreek Smith can kind of be that for them. Nick Jordan can kind of be that for them, but Musa Cisse, you know, obviously outside of his mid range jumper and his ability as a lob threat, he's pretty limited offensively. And then, you know, I think whatever you get, from a rebounding standpoint, you'd certainly like a guy who's got that much length and that much experience to be a factor in on the boards. You know, so far in his career, it's kind of ebbed and flowed. So, you know, you're hoping for a big senior year, out of him on the boards.
How do we think the Tigers will approach this one? Because Penny mentioned after the scrimmage against North Carolina, hey, it was kind of roll the ball out play. We weren't scheming it up. This wasn't a game we game planned for. We just want to get them out on the floor. Do you think there will be a similar approach tonight, or do you think that there will be more kind of in-game adjustments along those fronts? Like, how do you, I guess really the question is, what's the appropriate way to like view these exhibition games?
Well, if we're taking Penny at his word, I forget when we met with him, whether it was, I think it was Thursday. It was either Thursday or Friday. We sat down with him, and he didn't hesitate when he was asked something very similar to the question you just asked. And it was, no, we're ramping things up now. Like we are not, it does not sound like, if we're taking him for at his word, it does not sound like they are going to treat this game the same way they treated the North Carolina game. I don't know that they're necessarily going to be pulling out all the stops in a manner of speaking, like trying to win at all costs. But I think they're going to probably treat the game, you know, that notwithstanding, I think they're going to treat it as though it is a real game. And I mean, again, like that's what Penny said. I mean, I, you know, he talked a little bit more about it, but you know, he was asked point blank if he was going to, if it was going to be sort of the same approach as it was to the North Carolina game, where he came right out and said, like, we didn't do any, you know, we did not do anything hardly that we would normally do in a real game. And that was by design to a certain extent. He plainly stated, no, that was then, this is now, this is a totally different thing. We're getting close, you know, we're a week away. The regular season tips off in a week. It counts at that point. So, I do think that they are going to approach this game, much more like they will, next Monday.
I don't want this to like come across as a criticism of Penny, because it's like when you see the Tigers' schedule, it's like, okay, they do their best to get a legitimately good non-conference schedule. This is more of like a comment just in general from what we've seen in college basketball. It's like with all these exhibition games that are happening, it's like I just wish these were real games. And you know, for the most part, we're putting them on campuses, and it's like this is what we want to watch. This is what we want to see. Does Penny prefer having the exhibitions being like this, where, you know, compared to the Lemoyne Owen or the CBU game, like you're getting two real brands and two real tests? Like, would they prefer that? Like, I just kind of find myself wishing, like, man, I just wish these games were for real.
I think he does. I think in his heart of hearts, he does prefer these over the others. Now, there is that special place in his heart, in Penny Hardaway's heart. Like, he's a Memphis guy. He's a city. He's for the city. When he came up, when he was a player at then Memphis State, like, their exhibitions were reserved for, you know, the Lemoyne Owens and the Christian Brothers and so on and so forth. So I do think that there is that sentimental, factor that I think does weigh on him. But I think if everything was being equal, he would much rather do these types of things, play in these name brands. You know, and then of course, you know, you put the charity aspect, on them, and it becomes a no brainer. You know, but, it would be amazing if these games actually count.
Yeah, like I'm watching, you know, Hurley going back to Duke, like Ole Miss, Illinois, Tennessee had a big one over the weekend. Purdue maybe. So like it's like all these games, and it's like I guess it's better than them when they were the secret scrimmages, because that used to always drive me insane. Right. It's like at least like these are opportunities to see it. But it's like, man, why don't we just like all agree? Like if we're trying to create more attention for the sport and watching more games, like why aren't we doing this?
You know what's weird? What's kind of, I don't know, funny in a way. I mean, Alabama is kind of an outlier because Memphis was able to get Alabama on its regular season schedule before. But like, you know, if this is the only way you can get North Carolina on your schedule, like 2-year building, or I don't know, if they somehow get Arkansas,
sure,
if they somehow work out a deal with Cal, or you know, like, or Tennessee, like if they're able to get a deal with Tennessee worked out, like I don't know, I at that point I'm almost like, I'll take it, like whatever it takes to get on the floor with those teams that you so desperately want to get on the floor with. You know, I know that probably sounds a little weird, but I would almost take it no matter how it is, especially if it's for charity. Again, I keep going back to that charity part. You know, as long as the charities are involved, then you know, they can play them whenever, and it's all good.
All right, Munns, we appreciate it, buddy.
All right. Thanks, Jeffy.
That is Jason Munns, Tiger Basketball beat writer, of course, for the Commercial Appeal. Follow him on Twitter, on X, at Munsley. Again, the Tigers taking on Bama tonight. It is the Rocket City Classic. You can watch it on ESPN Plus, 7 p.m. tonight. Let's get into some football. We haven't talked it yet. We had a big weekend of college football, a big surprising Sunday yesterday in the NFL. Let's discuss that. We'll also get into best and worst of what we saw over the weekend. We'll do all that coming up in hour number two. Stick around. You're listening to Jeffrey Wright and Company on 92.9 FM ESPN.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.